Recordings has started.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everybody. Welcome to the first GNSO EPDB team meeting on August 1st, 2018 at 14:00 UTC. In the interest of time, there will be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room only. If you are on the phone bridge and not in the Adobe Connect room, could you please let yourselves be known now? Not hearing anyone. We've received apologies from Emily Taylor and Matt Sterling from the registrars, Georgios Tsilantis from the GAC. They formally assigned Theo Gertz, Jeff Ye, and Chris Lewis-Evans as their alternates for this call and for the remaining days of absence. During this period, the members will have read-only rights and no access to conference calls. Their alternates will have posting rights and access to conference calls until the members return. Thomas Rickett from the ISPCP just sent his apology for the call with no time to assign an alternate. As a reminder, the alternate assignment must be formalized, and the URL is in the agenda pod at the top right of the Adobe Connect room. All documentation and information can be found on the EPDB wiki space, so please don't hesitate to refer over there. There's an audio cast for non-members to follow the call, so please do remember to state your names before speaking. Recordings will be circulated on the mailing list and posted on the public wiki space shortly after the call. Thank you ever so much, and over to you, Kurt.
Thank you so much, Natalie, and welcome everyone. I'm really pleased and honored to be leading this group. For me, it's an opportunity to renew many old acquaintances with colleagues that I've worked with in the past, so I'm happy for that. I also see that there's people with whom I haven't worked with before, so that will be a rewarding thing for me, too. The ICANN staff is, and some others have worked really hard in preparing for this first meeting and trying to lay a good foundation for all the work that must be done. So we'll display the results of that work now, take your comments, and that will provide us direction for how to go forward. I'm going to drive the slides here. We've all attended many ICANN meetings, and it always starts with an agenda, and the agenda always has exactly six items on it, which I found to be a remarkable coincidence and somewhat forced. Then when I did the agenda, I found out I had six sections to my agenda, too. Maybe it's a secret science. Right after I get done speaking here, we'll go into team introductions, and then I want to have a very brief discussion about the EPDB team leadership and the position of vice chair. Then there's not really six items on the agenda. Most of our conversation will be taken up with our running rules or operating mode, and there we'll talk about the statement participation, all the documentation that's available and needs to be read, early input, which is part of the PDP process, our meeting frequency and schedule, and what we're going to do at the next ICANN meeting, the charter and its deliverables, the timeline, rules of engagement, and the possibility of using mediation or facilitation techniques for our meetings. I want to get your input there. Then I also don't want to make this meeting purely administrative. I do want to get into substantive stuff. There will be a reserved, hopefully, 45 minutes at the end for that, for substantive discussion. That's essentially the agenda. I reserve now 30 minutes for team introductions. First of all, thank you so much for sending in the bios. I think that was great. You know what's interesting is I actually read each one of the bios where in other meetings such as this, I'll be doing emails while we're going around the proverbial room. Thank you for that, and I invite you all to read all the bios if you haven't. The staff has posted the bios on a wiki page, the team membership page. You can find them there if you don't read them in your email. For this portion, I had reserved time for for each team to say a little bit about itself, you know, 2 to 3 minutes, because we want to get through this in half an hour or so. Caboose, who's the GAC representative from Iran, wrote to me and suggested, you know, this could be done through email too. So I'm going to leave it up to each team. I would like to hear from the team. So if you're ready to speak, I'd enjoy a two to three minute description of your goals and maybe your team or whatever you wanted to say. But you know, Caboose's idea gives you the opportunity to pass and provide something in writing. So with that, since I'm in charge, I'll just start and pick the business group. So Margie, Mark, or Steve, do one of you want to speak?
This is Mark. So, hi, we're here from the business constituency, and our goals are, sorry, a bunch of chat going on here. Our goals are to reinforce our belief that privacy is a human right and that GDPR is progress, and that there are legitimate purposes for the data set that make it imperative for them to be available under certain circumstances to certain entities for legitimate purposes, and we believe that these are compatible goals that can be resolved in this policy development here.
Kurt, this is Natalie from Staff. You may be
muted. So in my brilliance, so there's this button on my phone called mute. So James Bledel from the Registrar Stakeholder Group, I saw you had your hand raised. Did you want to make a separate comment, or did you want to speak on behalf of the registrars?
Thanks, Kurt. Yes, this is James speaking for the record, and I'll just go ahead and speak on behalf of the registrars. Unfortunately, two of our three members could not make this initial call. But we are joined by some of our alternates. So not surprisingly, registrars are eager to get started. We have a lot of skin in the game, so to speak. We, as contracted parties, we are on the front lines of some of the issues that will be addressed by this EPVP. I think that we all recognize that the temporary spec is not perfect. It is a band-aid or it's a crutch. And but I think most importantly, it is as the name implies, it is temporary, and the clock is running out. And so I think we are eager to get started to find something that can take its place on a permanent basis that is technically and operationally feasible, that gives us some degree of certainty under the law and mitigates our legal risks and addresses the consensus views of this working group and the broader community. And I guess that's about it. But we are, I think, more than anything, we are looking to lock down what we can agree on as much as possible, as quickly as possible, and get us off the clock as with some time to spare. I think at ICANN we are a deadline-driven community, and in this particular instance, I think getting us right up against the expiry of the temporary spec would be probably the only failure scenario in this of this working group. Really, what we ought to be doing is racing towards completing as much work as possible as quickly as we can, and I look forward to working with everyone on that. Thanks.
Thank you, James. Esteban, can you talk on behalf of the Internet service providers? Esteban Lascano?
Yes. Hi, everybody. Yes, we don't have a statement at this stage, but I can introduce our team, formed by me and also Thomas Ricker. He's from Germany, and I think that everybody knows him. And in my case, I'm also a lawyer with lawyer working for the ISP Association in Argentina, CABACE, and we want to give our view on behalf of the ISPCP constituency. But at this stage, we don't have a statement to make.
Thanks, Esteban. That was great. For intellectual property, Alex or Diane?
Yeah, hi, Kurt. It's Alex Seekin. Can you hear me all right?
Yes, I can.
Thanks. So my name is Alex Deacon, and both myself and Diane will be representing the IPC in this PDP. Diane is an experienced IP lawyer, an expert in matters relating to privacy and the GDPR. As for myself, my experience is in internet technology, policy, and infrastructure, including DNS and things like authentication, encryption, identity, and the like. I think Diane and I bring a set of skills that are not only wide and deep, but also relevant to the task that we have at hand here. Our goals are simple. It's to participate actively, constructively, and respectfully toward the definition of a policy for a global RDS system that meets the needs of the IP community in a GDPR-compliant manner. I'll just close. I think Diane in her intro yesterday said it eloquently. That we look forward, both of us, to working collaboratively and listening, learning, contributing, and to find solutions to achieve the important goals and missions of this group. Thank you.
Great. Perfect, Alex. For the registry stakeholder group, Alan, Christina, or Max, Mark.
Hey, Kurt. This is Mark Anderson from the Registry Stakeholder Group. I'll provide the introduction. As you said, I'm joined by Alan Woods and Christina Rosette. And from the Registry Stakeholder Group's goal is to participate actively and in good faith towards a consensus policy that addresses the questions set forth in the EPDP Charter. The Registry Stakeholder Group believes that any consensus policy developed by the EPDP must provide a clear path for compliance with the GDPR, be commercially reasonable and implementable, take into account our differing business models, and does not inhibit innovation. Thank you for this opportunity, and we look forward to working with everybody on the DPDP.
Thank you, Mark. From the non-commercial users group, I don't know who's on this call, Stephanie, Aiden. Milton, Dolph, Amra?
I'll take it. Can you hear me, Kurt? This is Aiden.
Hi, Aiden. How are you? Yes, I can.
Perfect. Thanks. Hi, everyone. My name is Aiden Zutlane, and I'm pleased to be speaking before you today on behalf of the Non-Commercial Stakeholders Group, the NCSG. As you might be aware, we are the only place within the ICANN ecosystem that is specifically reserved for the advancement of non-state and non-market interests. We represent more than 700 nonprofit organizations and individuals who wish to advance non-commercial policy objectives at ICANN, including respect for human rights, freedom of expression, and access to knowledge. And our members include academics, civil liberties groups, religious organizations, free software groups, and ICT for development organizations. So our mission overall is to protect and support non-commercial communication and activity online as it is enabled by the domain name system. And consistent with that mission, the NCSG is participating in this EPDP to ensure that the fundamental rights of natural persons during the collection, processing, and or disclosure of their personal data as a result of GTLD domain name registration is protected by the policies that the EPDP team develops, and that this right is not overridden by third-party interests to the extent that these rights are protected by the GDPR. Time is against me now, so I'll leave my brief opening remarks there. But just to reiterate, on behalf of the NCSG, we are delighted to be here, and we look forward to collaborating with everyone on this call over the coming months. Thanks.
Well done, Aiden. Those were the GNSO stakeholder groups and constituencies. I'd like to turn now to advisory committees. So, Ashley, I understand from the chat, are you going to introduce the GAC members and the GAC role?
Thanks, Kurt. This is Ashley Heineman. I'm the U.S. GAC representative, joined today by my colleagues Kavous from Iran and Chris from the U.K. Chris is actually standing in today for Georgios from the European Commission, who is our regular member, but he's unable to join us today. So I'm going to read a written statement, so bear with me. The GAC welcomes this EPDP and the invitation to participate in it. The GAC believes that this group has an important role to play in developing, as part of all relevant efforts of ICANN in the community, what the GAC believes should be a comprehensive model. This comprehensive model should allow access to non-public WHOIS data for authenticated users with a legitimate and proportionate purpose in a manner that is consistent with the EU's General Data Protection Regulation and other data protection legislations elsewhere. The GAC recognizes the challenge ahead for this group and welcomes discussion on the chair's proposal to maximize the efficiency and effectiveness of this team. The GAC is setting up for itself special procedures related to this EPDP to allow for timely and effective input from all concerned governmental stakeholders. The GAC nominated 6 representatives to this PDP, all of whom are expected to be equally engaged in the work of this group, be they members of the EPD team or alternates. They will be supported in the work by additional government representatives, experts, and advisors. Regarding the substance of which this group will be called on to deliberate, among other matters, the GAC has stressed on several occasions in its 2007 WHOIS principles and GAC advice or community consultations that WHOIS or registration directory services help achieve many public policy interests. WHOIS should be maintained to the greatest extent possible while ensuring full and timely compliance with GDPR. Finally, it should be noted that GAC comments on the interim compliance model and GAC advice in the ICANN 60, ICANN 61, and ICANN 62 communiques should be added to the resource list that was shared by Kurt earlier. Thanks.
Thank you so much. From ESSAC, Theo, or Benedict? Oh, it's Ben. I'm sorry.
It's Ben. Good morning. On behalf of ESSAC, myself and Benedict, we're very happy to be able to participate in this work. In ESSAC, we're always extremely focused on issues that we think might negatively impact security, stability, and resiliency, and this is no different. Our main goals in participating in this EPDP are to make sure that security and stability issues are thought of from both perspectives, both the registration data providers and those who would consume it or access it. We believe very strongly that a properly implemented registration data system will enhance and continue to enable by enabling law enforcement, security practitioners, and other legitimate parties with legitimate interests under the GDPR to be able to continue to protect the Internet. While at the same time, we recognize that if too much personal information is made too widely available, which is kind of how we got here in the first place, then there's a different kind of security issue in that it fosters spam and malware and all sorts of abuses, and we don't want the WHOIS or registration data system to be misused in that way. So we will be sticking to our guns on the security and stability issues, but we want to make sure that it's done in such a way that it can be useful for everybody. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Ben. That's good. Alan and Hadia, I saved the best of the multi-stakeholder model for last. So can one of you introduce ALAC and your objectives here?
Yeah. Thank you. It's Alan. I'll speak on our behalf. The ALEC believes that the EPDP must succeed, and we'll be working to that end. And as James said, if we can do it earlier rather than just to the deadline, so much the better. And we believe it will be possible to reach closure in the time frame we have. We have a support structure that we're organizing to ensure that what we present here is understood by our community and has their support and input. The ALEC believes that individual registrants are users, and we have regularly worked on their behalf. An example is the PDP we initiated to protect the rights, registration rights at expiration time. But if the registrant needs differ from those of the 4 billion Internet users who are not registrants, those latter needs do take precedence, and we believe the GDPR and this PDP are such a situation. Although some Internet users do consult who is and will not be able to do so going forward, our main concern is access for those third parties who work to ensure the Internet is safe and secure for users. And that means law enforcement, cybersecurity, researchers, those combating fraud in domain names, and others who help protect the Internet from phishing, malware, spam, fraud, DDoS attacks, and such, all with minimal access in their reduction to who is. And, of course, it's going to be subject to whatever the constraints are within GDPR. Thank you.
Great, Alan. So we're also really pleased to have two ICANN board members that are liaisons to this group, Chris and Leon. Do either one of you want to speak on behalf of the board or introduce your role here?
Hey, Kurt, it's Chris. And I'm getting a huge echo now, but that doesn't matter. Just to say hi, we're here to liaise, give a board perspective when we're asked for it, and take part as best we can, and wish you all luck.
Thank you, Chris. Well, so just to follow on what Chris said, I think... luck is not what we need, but it's good preparation. And, I'm appreciative and honored of the thought that went into all those opening statements. I thought, I think that they were well put. And so we should publish them. And so to the extent you have a written statement that you, you could send that into the group, and Natalie or someone will put the email address, reiterate the email address. To send them. If you don't, what we'll do is make a written version of it from the transcript and send that to you for your edit. So a little bit of a task that'll take a couple days, but since quite a bit of effort went into that, I think we should memorialize it because it does frame up the issue pretty well. So thank you. So. Through that bit ahead of schedule and started the meeting on time, so I'm pretty chuffed. And I just want to note that the slides are kind of hard to read because I chose the wrong slide formatting. And so if you want to see the slides, you can go to the wiki page. The observers can see this, can have access to the slides there too. So if you want to see a better version of the slides, they're there. Marika, did you have something to say?
Yeah, thanks, Kurt. This is Marika. Just on the previous item, as I noted in the chat as well, staff is keeping high-level notes of the call that will circulate immediately after the meeting that you'll hopefully find helpful. But of course, you're more than free to follow up with a written statement, which we'll then post on the wiki, and I posted the address to send them to in the chat as well. So hopefully between those two, we'll be able to capture everything that people have shared.
Okay. All right, with that, we'll get into the next agenda item. So thanks very much. I want to, those statements are so good, I just want to declare victory and go home. So our first order of business is a selection of a vice chair who will help me manage the different conversations that go on in a meeting, help with administrative and substantive tasks, and stand in as the chair if I cannot be here. And the chair is to come from this group. So I've been thinking about this, and as you saw in my note to you, I'd like to select Rafiq Damek as the vice chair. He's the GNSO liaison to this group. So he's a natural choice, I think, because he's independent in that way, and he's motivated his major motivation is the overall success in this group and reaching consensus rather than have another sort of interest in the outcome. And, you know, knowing Rafiq personally for many years, you know, he's a thoughtful, well-spoken, hardworking individual, and that will serve this group very well. So I was hoping to have a brief conversation about this and move on, but I really want to run this sort of by objection rather than vote. So, Kavus, do you have a comment?
Yes, no objection, no vote. We agree with Rafiq with your selection. That is good. I think you could take it, ask the people. If there is no problem, you will take it as it is and then go to the next item. Thank you.
Well, thanks for that, Kavus. Does anybody else wish to speak, or should we confirm? Go ahead, James.
Thanks, Kurt. I think registrars have. Thanks, Kurt. Sorry about that. Registrars have had some time to discuss, and I think that we also agree that no objections to supporting Rafiq as vice chair, and we should proceed based on acclamation or voice vote. Thanks.
Mark?
Thank you, Kurt. This is Mark Anderson. I have a question, I guess, and this might be for Rafiq, but I want to, you know, one, I want to ask, you know, Rafiq if he's, you know, comfortable with the time commitments. I think the GNSO liaison plays an important role, and being that he's on the GNSO Council, he already has a lot on his plate. And then taking up this role as a member of the EPDP leadership team would be an even bigger drain on his time. So I think my first question would be to Rafiq, you know, is he comfortable with that time commitment, and will he be able to devote the time necessary to this role? And another question I want to add to that, you touched on it a little bit, but I want to understand what Rafiq's what hat Rafiq will be wearing, if you will. You know, Kurt, you know, you've taken on the role as chair of this PDP with the expectation that you'll do so in an independent basis, not representing any particular constituency. And so I want to ask, will Rafiq be asked to play the same role? Will he be independent? Will he be representing the GNSO Council? Or will he be performing the role in his own individual capacity? So I don't know if Rafiq is willing or able to answer those, but I do have those questions.
Okay. This is Rafiq speaking. thanks, Mark, for those questions. So, with regard to the time commitment, I'm aware about that, and since I accepted to be council liaison, I kind of factored that the level of workload that needed to be done, and I have to follow what's going on anyway in the APDP team. regarding I mean, as you understand, if I'm participating in my personal capacity, is not the case, because not being a member of the APDP team, but a council liaison, I have to be independent and neutral, and not participating in the substantive discussion, but to monitor the activities, to report, to support and help, in this case, to help the chair. So, I'm sorry. So, it's kind of the, I understand the expectation from this role, and to be the council liaison, and not going to participate in the substantive discussion. If I think that's maybe the concern you have, Mark, I would be happy to elaborate on it. So, sorry.
So, Mark, do you think you got an answer to your question?
Thanks, Kurt. This is Mark. No follow-up questions. Thank you.
So, Cavus has raised an interesting point in the chat, and that is that traditionally the GNSO liaison is not the vice chair. And in preparation for, you know, in having this thought, you know, we discussed the idea, several of us discussed the idea with the GNSO leadership, who thought this was would be a good nomination also. And so with our approval of this, with this, we'll go to the GNSO and ask their permission, but I see that as a formality. So if so, I guess we should try this out. If anybody wants to vote, you know, in the hand raising section, you can vote. You can agree or disagree. So I'll just you're free to agree, and I'll look for areas of people who disagree, and we'll address those if there are any. And just to be really clear, in the hand raise, where you raise your hand in the upper left-hand-ish corner, there's the ability to agree. If in that pull-down menu, there's the ability to agree or disagree. So I think there's enough yeses. I'll just look for no's at this point. Okay, great. So what we're going to do is write a note to the council leadership and ask them to confirm Rafiq as the vice chair. So that's terrific. Thank you very much, everyone. In my note to you, yes, Mark?
Yeah, pardon me for being confused. Just a point of order. So was there actually a vote on Rafiq? I kind of missed the, you know, there was like 5 minutes of discussion and now he's the vice chair. Is that how that works? I'm a little confused. Sorry.
So yes. And if your thought is that we need to inject some more formality into this, I'm trying to think how. So, would you prefer that we look for a vote and have a vote count, or I think for me, I think that we would not confirm Rafiq as vice chair if there were objections. In the voting column here, the so-called voting column, I saw, you know, about half of the people vote yes and nobody vote no. So, Mark, if you'd prefer us to be more formal about it, let me know your idea.
You know, I'm sorry, Mark, for the record, I don't have a strong opinion on it either way. I don't know Rafiq, and I don't have anyone in mind to put up, you know, in his place. On the other hand, I'm just, you know, as a new person playing my new guy card, I'm just wondering what is the typical process for something like this in a panel like this.
So for me, we'll do, hopefully at the end, we're going to do precious little voting in this group that we want to drive to in the bigger questions, we want to drive to solutions that are agreed to by the whole or nearly the whole. And so for this, you know, and admittedly, I've been thinking about this for, you know, I've been in this job for 2 weeks, so I've been thinking about this for 2 weeks, and you've only been thinking about it for 2 days, and you're not familiar with Rafiq. So I thought I'd be ready to go ahead with this, unless somebody objected. But I'm happy to reconsider the process. So why don't we hear from Cavus and Allen, and then circle back to you. Cavus?
Yes, Kurt, can I speak, please?
Yes.
Yeah, Kurt, I'm very sorry that at this very early stage we are thinking of voting and so on and so forth. Chair has been selected by the NSO. Chair should have someone to collaborate with him, and Chair should have some confidence, although you have confidence to everybody, but a close confidence to the Vice Chair. You have suggested, Rafiq, just suggested. I don't think that we need to vote on that. And I think we should appreciate the efforts that Rafiq is going to do taking this very difficult task. I neither agree that you refer the matter to the GNSO. GNSO has done his job, and the chair has been selected, elected, designated, and now it is up to this meeting. And I don't think that one objection will break everything. So I think you should go that whether there is any major objection to that. If there is no, we should confirm Rafiq as the vice chair, unless GNSO sending a letter saying that they do not agree with that. That is another thing. And the second option? Yeah. Thank you.
Go ahead. Okay. Thank you very much, Cavus. Allen?
Thank you very much. 2 points. Number one, I'd like an opportunity to consult with my community, so I would suggest at the very least you have a couple of days where anyone can raise objections or concerns via email. Number two, if I remember correctly, the rules of a PDP, and I presume we're following similar ones here, is that the council liaison is the first recourse for someone to raise an issue of concern with the leadership of the review team. We are dealing with contentious things, and there may well be people who want to do that, to have the same person as the liaison and be part of the leadership team means you're appealing to the same person who made the decision. So I think at the very least we'd need some separation or replacement of that function if we go forward with this path. Thank you.
Thanks, Allen. And that's the balancing we did, you know, looking through the and this sort of answers Cavus' question too, that we look through the cast of our team and found Rafiq to satisfy the most important criteria of independence and knowledge of GNSO processes and the like. And so with that, we thought that tipped the scale in that balancing between that and going back to the council in case of a conflict. But I think your suggestion of replacing that role is a really good one. So I'm going to take that on board. Thanks very much. James?
Thanks, Kurt. James speaking for the record. And I want to just agree mostly with Cavus. You know, the E and EPDP, let's remember, reminding ourselves that it stands for expedited. We should try all of our informal proceedings as much as possible and rely on the medited path to making decisions. And only if those lightweight processes fail should we move to something like voting. I do disagree with Cavus, however, that the GNSO Council should notify and given the opportunity to formally ratify this decision. That's usually how PDPs are conducted. And that's usually that ratification is more of a formality than anything else. But if there are no objections to Rafiq, then I suggest we go on. Allen makes a good point, and I think we could also position it to the council. We have selected the council liaison as a vice chair, and if they ratify that decision, then they should offer up another liaison.
Great.
Or identify one from the members.
Right. So I am... So I'm going to give Mark an opportunity to come back, but I'm of a mind then to go ahead with this and with Allen and yours recommendation. Go ahead, Mark.
Yes, thank you everyone for explaining the various processes. I do not have an objection. It was merely a point of clarification, so please proceed.
All right, thanks very much. So we're going to report this conversation to the GNSO. Cavus, we have to do that as part of the process. So we're going to report that, and we're going to bring up the issue that Alan, James, and others in the, and Ashley in the chat and others have raised about the ability to report on problems and address that. And then we will write an email back on this matter to everybody. So great. So I'm going to get into having had a couple weeks to think about this, I've had several thoughts about the operation of this group. It departs somewhat from how groups have operated in the past. So, again, these are kind of old ideas to me because I've been running through them in my mind all day and all night for a couple of weeks, but want to get your feedback on them. So the first in the agenda was, the first thing is a statement of participation. And again, I had beautiful gold boxes here with, large font that you could read. But the GNSO Council went to considerable effort to craft a statement of participation about how parties conduct themselves while operating in the, and participating in this process. And so I just created this slide to bring that to a point. You know, if they didn't think it was important, they wouldn't have gone to such a great effort. So, you know, there's words in the statement of participation, you know, genuinely cooperate, respect, ethical and responsible, reasonable, objective, and informed. Please take some time when you go through these slides or read through that statement of participation and, you know, reflect on these 13 or so different word groups and test everything you say against these. So thanks very much for that. I don't really see a need for discussion on this point. So I'm going to go on to the next thing. There's a lot of documentation associated with this. I haven't read it all myself, but I hold us all responsible, me included, for being, you know, very, very familiar with some documents and aware of the existence of other documents so I can refer to them if need be. And so the ICANN staff members have created the documentation library at this link. You know, some of the must-reads, of course, are the temporary specification itself. I the first several times I read it, I came away with some different thoughts each time. So, you try to read behind the words. And so please read that over again. The team charter issued by the GNSO is also very important. We're going to talk about that in more detail later. Lately, there's been ICANN correspondence with EU privacy authorities that sheds additional light on our endeavor. So please read that. And there's a proposed access models out there. And I'm not sure all of them are included in this documentation library. So I will get that updated. I don't plan to have a session to review the temporary specification or the team charter, but I know the ICANN staff has made presentations on both, and so they're sort of in the can, so to speak. And so I get distracted by all the different chats going on. So if you want to have a session that's sort of devoted to the overview of these documents, that can be scheduled. So if many people want it, we can schedule it as part of this regular meeting, or we can schedule a separate session, which is kind of what I prefer, for those of you who want to attend. So there's no need to memorialize your request about that now, but if you would, if somehow you would let ICANN staff know about that, those review sessions would be arranged. Caboose?
Yes, Kurt. Just for your information and others, in GAC we have established a small group of three members and three alternative plus few others. We had our first meeting and we will have our second meeting on Friday. By that meeting, we discuss whether we need to focus on a particular part of the temporary specification. At this stage, we could not decide on that because we have not discussed that. But please leave it open. We may come and ask clarification or further amendment or some other things on particular part of that, but we'll do it later. We can't do it at this stage. So please leave the door open for further requests for review and amendment or clarification. Thank you.
Thank you, Kavos. We certainly will. Milton? Hey, Milton, you're on mute, I think. So, Milton, even though we did the sound check earlier, something's happened. So, we'll find some alternate means. Maybe we can do a call out. We can have a call out to Milton. All right, so there's no, without any additional comments on the documentation library, but the commitment to come back to we'll come back to Milton when we establish communication with him. And Milton, if you could just type into the chat if you'd like a call out to that or call out to your number or however we can reach you. All right. Early input. So early input is a requirement of the PDP process, whether it's an expedited PDP or this one. And so early input is generally a requirement of this process intended to elicit written input from every ICANN supporting organization and advisory committee. And you know, it's done in an initial part of the process, you know, and it's especially targeted at those who aren't actively participating in the process. But in this case, this exercise is kind of moot because of the fact that almost every ICANN, with the exception of the CNSO and RSAC, you know, we have every ICANN representative group here. And so this is the early input is slightly redundant. Also, since this is an EEPDP, this early input time span can be limited to 21 days, and we want to take that option and limit the timing to 21 days because we hope to be, you know, in 21 days we hope to be fairly well down the road in substantive discussion. So the earlier input we get, the better. And also, we're, as you're going to find out, we're going to ask you to fill out a survey on your as part of our early deliverable on the temporary specification. So again, it's somewhat redundant. So this request for early input is in the form of a letter from me. And it asks specific, you know, fairly specific questions about the temporary specification. It'll be sent out to every SONAC leader right after this call. And it will be, unless we want to change that here, the timing of input will be limited to 21 days. I want to make one more point about this, the early input, and that is that because it's so time limited, I'm suggesting that people comment on the first deliverables of our work, which really focus on the temporary specification itself. We'll provide another opportunity for written input from stakeholder groups on access models, which will require more thought and maybe longer than 21 days at a later time. So this doesn't preclude any other written input from any other group. But in fact, you know, we need to tick this box because it's part of the process, and we want to tick it as fast as we can because we're going to start moving as fast as we can. So that's sort of a notice to you all that it's going out. If anybody doesn't have any questions for that, I'll go on to the next topic. Milton's back. All right, so Milton's not back, but I'm anxious to hear your comment. All right, the next topic. Charter deliverables. So the charter is a longish document. First, the terms of engagement. So there's many questions in there that require answering. And the order in which we answer those questions is important in order to get our work done in a timely manner, but also satisfy all the requirements for the charter itself. So I want to talk first about the deliverables and then a bit about all the questions that are included in the charter. So the charter has three deliverables. One is a triage document, which, you know, I puzzled a bit at first, but then I thought it's a pretty good idea. So let's take stock of where we are. So there's, the temporary specification is made of many sections, and, you know, some sections we'll agree to without much discussion or thought. So if that discussion or thought isn't required, let's dispense with it. So we're going to create this triage document to let the GNSO know where collectively we are as a group. Where do we agree uniformly that, uniformly is a big word, that the certain sections of the temporary specification are fine as is, and, you know, what are the sections where that's not occurring. So we've developed some tools and a plan for how to do that triage that we want to address as soon as possible, and we're going to talk about that later in the call. The second deliverable is the first initial report. So it's hard to, I don't know how there can be two initial reports, but there you go. So the initial report really focuses on the temporary specification itself and our agreement on the final form, a final suggested form of the temporary specification. So that will require the consensus of this group, and how we arrive at that is still to be discussed amongst us. So I won't say too much more than that. And then the third deliverable is an initial report on a system for providing access to non-public who is or registration data. So those are the three deliverables, and I want us to focus on those deliverables. As I alluded to earlier, there's a set of questions associated with these deliverables that need to be answered, and the staff and I were, you know, puzzling about how to build a detailed schedule for getting this work done. You know, how many meetings do we need? What has to be done at each meeting? And so on. And we went through a couple iterations of the schedule. And, our thinking was, you know, wildly speculative because there's so much unknown about how this group's going to operate and what questions have to be answered. And, you know, we finally hit on the fact that once we've done the triage, we will have a lot more certainty about how we operate, how our conversations go, what the remaining number of issues is, and that will also inform us as to which of those questions still require answering and the order in which they should be answered. So we're going to put up a, you can put up the schedule we have now, you guys, if you want. But I don't think it's here. Yeah, it's up there. So, Natalie or Caitlin, if you could put up the timeline. So what we've done is just create an overall timeline for the first two deliverables that gets us to the meeting in Barcelona. And the idea is that we finish the triage document and furnish the initial report on the temporary specification in time for the Barcelona meeting. And then we're going to talk more about our timing in the Barcelona meeting, but then fall into our first discussions on the access model right then. So in this timeline, that orange stripe is our work leading up to the initial report. And the length of that orange line has been shrinking ever since the ICANN board passed the temporary specification. So what this timeline indicates is that we will do what I just said, furnish an initial report at the time of the ICANN meeting at Barcelona, and then go out for public comment. And then while that's out for public comment, we can start work on the access questions. And then I want to say, I want to say something else about the schedule. So I don't know whether I think this is available in the wiki, and it's not very complicated. So if you can take this down and go back to the slides, I just want to say one more thing about schedule and then open it up for any questions. Well, Caboose, while they're changing the slide, why don't you go ahead? Caboose?
Excuse me, Kurt. Can you hear me now?
Yeah. Yes. Milton, yes.
Yeah.
We're so happy.
I've got my hand up. I didn't put it up again until I knew I could actually talk, so here I am. Yeah.
Good job.
So should I go ahead?
Yes,
okay,
please.
So the thing I initially raised my hand about, and then I lost connectivity, so I don't know whether you covered it, but you were talking about going through the temp spec, section by section. And I think that would be unnecessary and kind of a waste of time. What we should do first is get those early inputs in front of us, because I suspect that, for example, the contracted parties have very specific problems with very specific sections, and we have very specific problems with specific sections. So once we can see what others constituencies or stakeholder groups are concerned about, then we can go through the temp spec on our own and see whether we agree with them or disagree with them. But I think at this stage of the game, if somebody's not sort of reasonably familiar with what's in the temp spec, it would be kind of a waste of the time of the group as a whole to go over it bit by bit. I also have a comment about the charter deliverables. I think I have a problem with the third one. It seems to me that the third deliverable is not a report outlining a proposed model of access, but it is an answer to the gating questions, a complete set of answers to all of the gating questions, and there's quite a few of them. So maybe there are four actual deliverables. But number three has to be, you know, do we have a complete answer to all of the gating questions that allows us to proceed to developing an access model? Thank you.
Thanks, Milton. That's thoughtful. So to answer your second question first, I essentially cut and pasted the language out of the charter under the deliverable section four. for the slide, and admittedly, it's somewhat truncated because I didn't want the slide to be too wordy, and as everybody's reading the charter for themselves, but you're exactly right that those gating questions are prerequisites to creating this deliverable about an access model. So the charter is pretty clear that a deliverable is what's written here, but the charter is also very clear that, just as you said, the gating questions need to be answered as a prerequisite. I think I said that word too many times. So I think we're agreeing, but I want to make sure. And then on the topic of schedule, in a better situation, I think you're right. But 3 weeks waiting 3 weeks, even for the shortened time frame for this early input is 30% of our available time to do this whole job. And so, request we're going to go out where we ask people's opinions on the specification, it really is sort of the same, it's sort of a parallel path as the early input. And so, which I tried to explain makes the early input kind of moot, and actually where we're going out to ask people their opinion on the temporary specification could actually serve as their early input. So, yes, I think it'd be better if we did it in a measured fashion that way, but for this triage document, getting this underway in a reasonable period of time, it's necessary. We're going to go out with a request to the stakeholder groups for, essentially very similar information. And, from the ALAC point of view, you're free to fill out that request in any way you want. But I guess the final point I want to make is that sitting here, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, but sitting here when we're making a request for early input, and then also which is a requirement, making this request to help with the triage document. I have this sense that we're talking to the same group of people, and it's up for you as the representatives of your group to understand when you need to go back to the group and talk about it, and when as their appointed representative you're empowered to go ahead with the go ahead with input. So yeah, I think I'd rather wait for the early input and then mash them all together and see where we are, but I don't think we have that luxury. And then I just have one more thought, and that is, to the extent you want to be educated about the temporary specification or the charter, that we can have some sort, besides a staff-conducted training session, we can have, a mashup of the different stakeholder groups here and talk about it. So I hope that answers your question, Caboose.
Yes, you have answered my question, but I have some other comments, but I leave you continue this one because I have some other comments on the timing and on the review of the temporary certification. I don't think that the objective of this meeting to be any tutorial on the technical, on the temporary certification. I think the idea was put by someone, and also I suggested that you leave to every constituency to provide input on an area that they have a question and they have some comments, but not going through the temporary specification section by section. Thank you.
Thank you, Caboose. Amar?
Thanks, Kurt. Amar here. I just wanted to confirm my understanding of the e-timeline and our deliverables in them, and also just to make sure that the entire team here is sort of on the same page and have a common understanding of where we're headed. My understanding of the timeline is that the first two deliverables are what is going to be, or what are going to be covered in the first initial report by ICANN 63. And then subsequent to that, there would be the review of comments and whatever work we continue on afterwards. But am I correct in assuming that the third deliverable and the access model would not be done immediately? I mean, it would be required to be completed by April, and that we can sort of take a little bit more time to make sure we get this done properly. I ask this also because my understanding of the temporary specification is that we do need to deliver those first two deliverables before the deadline, when the temp spec sort of can't continue to carry weight in the registry agreements and the RAA. But my understanding of the temporary specification as it is now is that we do have a little bit of latitude to take a little bit more time in getting the access model done. Am I correct in this? Thanks, Kurt.
Yes. So, yes, you're correct. There is no deadline for an access model, but there's a great sense of urgency to finish that. So, with that tiny clarification, that's exactly right. I just want to make one more point about the schedule, and that is I've already made these, but and we're kind of short on time, so I just want to mention that, you know, I am thinking of a plan B, because this is not a lot of time between Barcelona and the Barcelona meeting and us, and if we don't finish on time, we don't want to be scrambling, and it's always bad to be searching for plan B then. So I looked in the schedule, and I don't want to have a discussion about this at this meeting, and we're not, because we're not making any decisions here, but, you know, personally, and as I wrote in my note, I don't see the need for the second comment period that's just before the board consideration of this, that, you know, every constituency group and stakeholder group and advisory committee has participated in this process, taken public comment with a rather large participatory group. This group will pass on the temporary specification, then the GNSO will consider it, and their members will consult with their stakeholder groups and constituencies, and, you know, at the end of all of that, you know, another comment period by the board seems somewhat redundant, you know, an opportunity to relitigate or otherwise. So for a later time, and maybe through email, I might bring up this, but it seems kind of low on the totem pole here. I want to talk about our operating mode. So here's my big idea here. And, you know, Cavus wrote me an email and said our meeting shouldn't be 2 hours. And, I think he might be right, because my voice is already given out, you know, 70 minutes in. But I've been thinking about how to conduct a conversation among us that sort of identifies issues quickly and then helps us drive to consensus a little faster. And so with that, I think we need a few things. One is, you know, the preliminary work done that lays out the topics for each meeting, so our discussions are narrow and tailored. So we have a very specific issue to discuss. And then rather than just throwing the issue open, I'd like to go around the virtual table and call on each of the groups that are represented here to have an opinion on this issue. And then having gone around the table, we can then identify the fact that there's consensus or we're on the way to consensus, or at least identify with great clarity what the issue is. And this is sort of difficult to picture without actually talking about something concrete. But then at the end of this, the you know, then we can nail down what the differences are and then have a constructive discussion about these issues. And what that looks like is, and, you know, if you have the real slide deck, I'm looking at that so I can actually see it. What this would look like is that we would start an issue and not in this order necessarily, but we call on each of the constituencies or stakeholder groups in the GNSO, go around that room, summarize the GNSO position and ID the issues, and then get input from the advisory committees on those issues or on anything that was said and their specific opinion. And then we'd look to them for help on resolving the issue or bringing up something new, and then drive a discussion. So I'd like to try, and I don't know if it'll work, but I'd like to try the sort of ordered discussion on each issue and test whether it gets us to a consensus position faster or not. Sort of gets away from the environment of plus ones in the chat room and, you know, having a simultaneous meeting in the chat room while people are speaking. And I think it'll focus our attention on the subtle and complex points being raised by each one of these groups, because it's going to require listening and understanding on our part. So that's my big idea for that. James?
Thanks, Kurt. James speaking for the record. So I like this approach just offhand. My question is more of just kind of an operational question. Is that how much forewarning would we have, or awareness of the issue would we have before we were asked to weigh in, to respond? Because if we are speaking, for example, on behalf of a stakeholder group, the registrar stakeholder group, we might have divergent positions within our stakeholder group or even amongst and across the members that are participating in the EPDP. And so the question would be, you know, in order to be able to comfortably say, you know, thumbs up, thumbs down, plus one, whatever, there needs to be some lag time between the introduction of the issue and before we're put on the spot to weigh in. But I do think that if we had, like, you know, even a 24-hour, 48 hours, you know, from one call to the next, some window where we could consult with our membership, consult with our stakeholders, and then we can come back, that this could speed things up. I think we just need that window in between.
And, yeah, I think that's exactly right. And, you know, my fond hope is to lay out not just the meeting-by-meeting issue, but a roadmap of the issues that will be discussed so that, you know, I think 24 or 48 hours is really tough. So I would aspire to more than that, and certainly appreciate the need to be able to prepare an answer. So I'm for that, and I hope we can provide more notice. Additionally, I kind of see where the issues might overlap. So we might talk about issue A at a meeting and then wrap up issue A at the next meeting and bring up issue B, because where there's differences, you know, driving towards consensus is not immediate or simple. So I also see another opportunity to consult with your group between meetings as we discuss these issues, and they'll probably overlap. So, you know, the second meeting might be the end of issue A and the start of issue B, and then the third meeting might be the end of issue B and the start of issue C. So I see a couple opportunities there to go back, do some homework. And actually, that intra stakeholder group discussion would be the area for, you know, making, you know, agreeing amongst yourself that you can make certain concessions or, you know, compromises or something like that. So I would look forward to that. Thank you very much. Alex?
Thanks, Kurt. It's Alex. So I think this will work. I like the thinking here. I had the same question as James, though. It seems to me that it would be super useful for all of us if we had if we had an indication of kind of what's coming up and what questions will be asked. And before James chimed in, I was going to ask if the list of issues would be actually outlined in this triage doc that's envisioned. I think that would be helpful. If not that doc, then perhaps the creation of a separate doc to kind of give us all an opportunity to prep as issues come down the pipe beforehand. I think that would help and would speed things up also. Thank you.
Thanks, Alex. And I think my answer to James' question applies equally to yours. So unless I agree with everything you said. So unless you see a gap there, then I'll go on to Cavus.
Yes, as far as GAC is concerned, I'm just experienced. It may be difficult for us if you raise a question and expect to have an answer next meeting. So I agree with you that you raise the question A in meeting one, you expect the answer in meeting three, allowing the time for reflections. If people have ready the question at meeting two, so far so good. But those who are not able to do that, at least at meeting three, that means one after the second one, they have the opportunity. So for us, you have to coordinate it to various ways and means. So I agree with you with that. And I don't know whether you're talking of the number of the meeting, because I have a comment on that, send it to you. The number of the meeting is not the only criteria. The efficiency of the meeting is the criteria. The more number does not mean we have the more success. The more success is the efficiency and of the chair and efficiency of the speakers, all of us, to have a collective responsibility, not turning around and talking and talking and talking. So I hope that you kindly understand that. And having two meetings in a week is very difficult for us, because you have to consult internally among ourselves, the alternatives and the members, and then we have to consult inside the GAC in one way or other. So two meetings per week seems to be very difficult. I'm not saying I'm against. I'm going to the consensus with the majority, but it would be very difficult, really. Thank you.
Thanks, Cavus. And as to your first point, I think you're right. So, you know, building consensus takes time to reflect, so that'll be necessary. I think, you know, Ashley's statement did a good job of defining how the GAC was going to participate and the GAC role. And, you know, we'll have the painful discussion about meeting frequency in just a minute. Milton?
Yes, I understand what you're trying to do by structuring the roundabout conversation by stakeholder group or constituency. I don't think things will be that simple. I think there'll be a lot of give and take, and you'll need to give people time to respond to arguments that are made, and you as chair and any other sort of centrists will be needing to take a very active role in trying to bridge differences. So it won't be this very simple linear process where everybody states their piece. But I think the main thing that concerns me about your process is the end game, and that is this declaration of consensus. I think there's a real danger and it's endemic to ICANN processes, and it particularly has happened in many Who Is related things, is that you're going to say we need consensus, but we don't really have consensus. So somebody's going to declare that there is a consensus when there's not. And I think that will be a real mistake, but it's a mistake that ICANN repeatedly makes. So I would just try to sensitize you to that issue. If there is, in fact, no consensus, you have to admit that and try to find it rather than just riding roughshod over dissenters. And in that regard, you know, I'm used to the determination of consensus within the GNSO, where we have a defined process among stakeholder groups, and it's impossible to declare consensus, for example, if an entire stakeholder group plus one from another stakeholder group doesn't agree. What are we doing in this case? What is your criteria for a consensus? How many people have to be out there before you say it's not a rough consensus, it's some kind of a division?
Yeah, so I think the answer is 63, right? 63 people have to agree. So I agree with everything you said. And, you know, this in this chart, this cloud down at the bottom, that's that very complex part that you talked about. And so what I'm – and I don't mean to diminish that in any way, because that is – that's the rub, right? And so this is intended to do is – sort of bring a sharp, an attempt to bring sharp clarity to where the differences are. So actually, you know, after this go around is done, you know, take this, you know, stay with as much specificity as we can where the differences are. So that becomes a tool, one of the tools in the toolbox for driving to some sort of compromise and agreement. And, you know, I do not have a good answer for you on, you know, my vision right now for what consensus will look like or what the requirement for that is. And I wouldn't be so glib to say we'll know when we see it. So that's how that's been defined varies somewhat, even though we've many times words have been put to what consensus is. We'll have to explore that. So, you know, I don't want to cop out by not answering your question, but that's the best one I have. Alan? Alan? You there, buddy? Okay, Caboose?
Yes, Kurt, you are dealing with a very delicate issue of a consensus. I think it's a very, very difficult issue to master. It depends mainly on the on the skill of the chair and also collaboration of the team. In ICG, we had in our charter, I hope that it appeared in the charter of this group, in the way, in the manner how the consensus to be built. And we had full consensus, and we had consensus, and we had others, and we tried to give some authority and some responsibility to the chair, together with the vice chair, to discuss with those people who may not agree to the situation, trying to explain the matter for them and trying to get their agreement or cover their points. I think that is a very important issue. I don't want that we copy the ICG, but I invite you, look at the charter of ICG. There is a good element on that, how to make the consensus. And we were successful finishing the ICG without any problems of voting. Thank you.
Can you send us the link to that, Cubbies?
Do you hear me?
Yeah.
Do you want to repeat what I said?
No, I want if you had a link to that specific document, you could send it to this group.
Okay. Thank you.
That
would be
very interesting to read. Alan, are you back?
I am back. The gremlins decided to drop my line just as you were calling upon me.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of decision-making, this is not the GNSO. It's a superset of the GNSO. But I think it's useful to look at the GNSO rules on decision-making. And within the GNSO proper, a decision cannot be vetoed by a single stakeholder group. It takes more than a stakeholder group to do that. So a single stakeholder group completely disagreeing with something cannot break a consensus and a decision of the GNSO. Including a supermajority decision. So if we use something comparable to that, but with the wider audience, I think we may be safe. Thank you.
Okay, thanks for that. I could get philosophical, but I won't because we're running out of time. So I'm going to leave that behind. I'm going to touch on a couple issues that we can discuss later. One is that, you know, I realize what my own skills and talents are, and I see the opportunity for us to use either mediation techniques or professional facilitation from time to time. So, I'm sorry. So, I think this group and this set of issues could it wouldn't be a car without a dog in the background, would it? So, I apologize for the interruption. Anyway, so I think, you know, these deliberations could benefit from using mediation techniques. You know, the GNSO Council has urged us all, if we're going to join this group, to be collaborative and engaging discussion and compromise. And mediation can really help that. And generally, a mediation is, I've been a mediator and a mediatee, but, you know, it's generally between two parties, but I've actually found in some discussions, mediation firms that I can't have spoken with before that specialize in multi-stakeholder mediation. So that's helpful. So I just want to flag for you for our later discussion that we're, you know, I am, but others are helping me explore the use of mediation in our discussion as a way to see if there's the opportunity for consensus on certain specific issues. And, you know, just from a personal standpoint, that would take, you know, so that would put I don't want to say less of a load on me, but find somebody with the appropriate talent and skills that can help us in a way better than I could or better than others in this group might be. So we're going to explore that. All right, Caboose, here's the news on the meeting. So, you know, if we have a weekly meeting, there'll be about 10 meetings between now and the meeting of Barcelona, and that's just not enough. So, you know, talking to the ICANN staff support here, we developed this schedule for meetings, which is 6 o'clock in the morning for me. But I think the best time globally, we looked at several charts that had everybody's time zone in it and figured this was the best time. So I want to come back to the meeting frequency because that's what we need to talk about. We're tentatively planning a face-to-face meeting. It's likely to be in Los Angeles because such a short time frame, and either the third or fourth week in September. And I think that I'd prefer to have a meeting right away to build up some sort of sense of team among us. But, you know, I think that timing might be good because we'll have on our plate, you know, the set of most complex issues that resolve consensus building. And I think that necessarily has to take place in a face-to-face forum. And then for Barcelona, we really don't want to ask people to come early or stay late. So Saturday's kind of early, but we've planned a full day of meetings for the Saturday of the meeting. And this could take the form of our first serious discussions about an access model, or it could take the form of wrapping up consensus on the temp spec, depending on how far we get. And there will also be a high-interest topic session on Monday that, I see of marginal use, and we're also reserving two 90-minute sections later in the week during the meeting. So with that, Caboose, is that an old hand? I've heard your opinion on...
It's a new hand, yeah.
Okay.
May I talk?
Yeah, I've heard your comments about the frequency of meetings and have taken that on board.
Before that, I wish to support what you said about mediator, but with one prerequisite condition. Mediator should be, to the extent practicable, neutral and impartial. So it may be difficult that the, among these people that are member alternative, you select or elect or designate someone as a mediator. Because no matter, human being is human being. You should look and explore possibility to have mediator outside these groups. This is point one, you explore. I'm not suggesting any person or any group. Second one, with respect to the venue of the meeting, I will communicate with you personally because there are some difficulty about that unless the difficulty is removed. And the third question, that for the face-to-face meeting, would there be any support for the meeting, travel support for the meeting, or not? Thank you.
Yep, so there'll be travel support for the meeting for members. And thanks for your comments about the mediation, and I picture that being a independent professional specializing in multi-stakeholder relations type of mediator. I'd like to hear about the frequency of the meetings, because we're about to send out invitations for a meeting on Tuesday at 1300 UTC.
Every Tuesday?
Tuesday upcoming.
Upcoming.
Christina?
Yes.
Christina Rosette, and I should note at the outset that this is not necessarily a registry stakeholder view because of time limitations. I certainly understand the concerns articulated by Caboose. I think we should start with meeting twice per week because if we are making good progress and we find that as we move forward that we don't need the extra meetings or we can shorten them, then we can do that. But if we start with only one meeting a week and we get too far behind, we're not going to be able to catch up. That's my view on that.
Thank you, Christina. Alan?
Thank you. I strongly support two meetings a week, although my preference would be, even if we schedule the meetings for 2 hours, to do our best to limit them to 90 minutes. I think 2 hours twice a week, especially when they're relatively close to each other, is rather problematic. But if we're going to stay with Tuesday and Thursday, then we have to recognize that raising an issue on Tuesday is not enough time to consult to get back for Thursday. But I agree with Christina. Starting with one meeting a week, I think, would be deadly. Thank you.
So do you think Monday and Thursday would be better? That sort of just poses the same question on the other end, right?
I think Tuesday and Thursday, they tend to be dates that are not already booked, and certainly I have a potential conflict on Monday. But Tuesday and Thursday, I think, are good days based on past history. But we just have to be careful what we do with them. Thank you.
Tuesdays and Thursdays are days of my classes. So I don't like Tuesdays and Thursdays.
What time are your classes? Are they all day? Milton?
They're in the evening.
Okay. James?
So strongly agreeing with Christina that we should go as fast as we can, as soon as we can, right out of the gate and see how we're doing later. I favor twice a week cadence. I don't, Tuesdays and Thursdays seem to be working. I would say that, you know, for personal individuals that may create conflicts, either standing or occasional conflicts, and I think this also goes for any face-to-face proposals, but I would just remind folks that this is why we have delegations from groups. This is why we have alternates. Make sure you're using your support network and leaning on this and taking a team-based approach, because there's just no way we're going to be able to do this and fit everyone's schedule and not create conflicts. Thanks.
Davos, did you get back on the queue?
Yes, I got back on the queue. I think there was no objection for 90 minutes instead of 120 minutes. Still, I believe that 120 minutes is too long. And I think I suggest that if there is no objection, you at least work on 90 minutes and then start with two meetings per week. But please kindly consider there are other meetings as well, so we should not have any parallel operation with those other meetings because some of us are are a member of that. And I don't think that we should say that, okay, you have alternative leave. Then no, we should try not to have meeting at the same time as they have. So that's the main effort, at least try to do that. So you explore on the situation. 90 minutes, two meetings per week, Tuesday or whatever day, and the timing, it should be, I don't know, fixed timing or rotation. I don't know. I leave it to you to suggest. Thank you.
Alan, so I really want to get to one more thing before we go that's important, but could you? Oh, Rafiq, go ahead.
This is Rafiq speaking. Just think to make a point that we are still need to confirm about the support for September meeting. So just maybe this is for clarification.
All right. Thank you, Rafiq. Alan, can you just take short of time frame as possible, what's your theory or philosophy on 90 or 120 minutes and 120 minutes being too long? What's the tipping point there so I can understand it?
It's Alan. I think you were asking me. I just find that 120 minutes people start to fade, and the quality sometimes goes down towards the end. So that's my only reason.
I guess I'm a case in point, aren't I? So, but I'm trying to keep going. Mark?
Thanks, Kurt. Mark Anderson. One of the things I want to point out is whether the calls are, you know, 2 a week or 1 a week or 5 a week or 90 minutes or 120 minutes, whether that's enough or not depends a lot on our ability to get work done offline. And I think that'll really depend on us. You know, if we're willing to, you know, communicate, collaborate, and move things forward via email and use the discussion group, then we may find we don't need as much time on these calls. But if we're unable or unwilling to do that offline, then we may actually find that more meetings are necessary. So I think that depends a lot on us. We have to be willing to put in the time and move things forward and make progress offline in order to be successful given the tight timeframes and turnaround of this EPDP.
Thank you, Mark. So now I don't have to give that part of my closing speech. I think that's right on the mark. Alan?
Thank you. I agree that we need to make progress on the list, but experience on a few other groups recently says there are some people who have nothing else in their life other than responding to every email with long responses. And if we start doing that, it becomes deadly because it really becomes impossible to make progress on the mailing list due to what are, you know, essentially people taking over the list. Thank you.
Thank you for that. I agree. So just to reiterate what Rafiq said, the two possible dates of face-to-face meetings might be, you know, what the preference of this group is and might be what the availability of certain facilities for ICANN is. So we'll see. I had hoped for more time for substantive discussion and kind of failed there. So I apologize, but I want to talk, kicking off this triage and our plan for this. So this is a couple slides long and then two or three slides long, and then I'll open it up for discussion. So our first deliverable is this triage document. And the bigger font. And, you know, just to understand where we have agreement on the temporary specification and so for the GNSO Council writers of the charter, this is an obvious first step, and I think it's a good one. So this is this first bullet and the sub-bullets are cut and pasted out of the charter, so defining what the triage document will say. But essentially it's going to say, you know, we agree with this part of the specification, or we agree with this parts of the specification if it had this edit, or sort of a, you know, remember the quick look process from the new GPLD program. So that's the purpose of the triage, and that's what we want to work on first. The methodology we propose and that we've developed will be to provide, a place to capture writing on each one of the on each one of the sections in the preliminary specification. I understand and I remember and took on board Milton's comment that to a certain extent this is putting the cart in front of the horse, but still, given the time frame, I think a necessary way of going about these. So, I didn't create it. Staff worked hard to create it. Create a written input that where you can say, you know, you agree with a clause as written, or you don't have an opinion, or, you know, even gives you the opportunity to edit or make a comment. You'll also be able to make an overall comment on the document or on certain parts of the document. So we try to make it not so constraining. And like I said before, it's remarkably similar to the early input request, but the early input request is a requirement of the PDEP process, and we're trying to get things going smoothly. So then we're sitting around saying, so how do we avoid giving all of you at least two or more time to fill out this form, because it's sort of the same? And that's a problem in that. And so our idea is to divide the temporary specifications into four sections. There are four sections. And we can start doing them serially. So we can all provide input on certain sections of the temporary specification and then consider them at the next meeting while, you know, and have that passing through the snake while we feed in another couple sections of the temporary specification into the beginning. And so, not a snake, but I've called it a pipeline in the slide, so that we can do this. So we will offer you this phased sort of input. And so I'm going to go back to the bigger slide so I can see this one. So the methodology for each one of these sections would be, prior to the meeting, and maybe, you know, it's meeting day minus three or four, but we provide written input submitted on specific sessions, and those are the survey responses themselves. And then the day before the meeting, the staff and I would synthesize these into a report area, identifying areas of consensus and difference. And then on the meeting day, we have a discussion on those issues. This triage report is not the primary driver of consensus. It's just to identify where there is consensus, but think there should be a spirit of team discussion to make sure we're not talking past one another or that our writings are clear. And then after that discussion, we can write, the staff and I can write the triage report section for your review, which would happen via email, for email review by the team. So this is how I kind of see this, each one of these sections passing through the snake. And then, so this is sort of the, I got to move the slides on. So this is the timing of it that I see. And we've posted, you know, as late as this morning, we were making adjustments to this. But as you can imagine, it's quite a bit of work in the last week. But, we've taken a shot at dividing the temporary specifications into really three, but, four sections with a smaller one and then the access issue at the end, which we're not going to address right away. And then
you know, sort of this timetable when it's a really rapid timetable. And, you know, I struggled over this and talked it over with Barry Cobb and others on the staff about this being too aggressive, but I thought I'd go out with an aggressive schedule first. And so that link that's there and maybe put into the chat so you can get at it is the first section, the first part of the temporary specification. The other parts will be filled in later today. So I think that's the end of the slides, and I hope that presentation was about how we want to proceed with the temporary specification was sufficiently coherent to understand and welcome comments. Because our plan is to request your input on part one starting essentially now. Farzi?
Thank you, Kurt. Can I comment on part four?
Certainly.
Farzi Nabadi speaking. Basically, it says part four that we are going to start discussing important issues, which under the parentheses there is access. And what does that mean? Because also it says Appendix C and Annex. And it was in the temporary specification, if I am not mistaken, remembering correctly, we are not supposed to, according to the charter of the group, we are not supposed to discuss things that are in the annex, if I'm not mistaken. So, and also I don't know why we are going to start discussing access on 19 August if this access means access to register and data, because I thought we have to talk about the first answer all the gating questions. Thank you.
So I agree. So we debated about this. You know, we really divided the temp spec into three sections, but then, you know, created a fourth smaller section, and this annex was included just to capture comments that could be made on that. But if the sense of this group is, you know, that it shouldn't be included and reserved for the time reserved for it, I don't disagree with that. So that's a good comment. Milton?
Yeah, same thing, only with more energy. That's a mistake. You've got to eliminate number four. That is a complete violation of the charter, and it's a complete disruption of the entire logic of this process. We have to get the temp spec done. We have a deadline on the temp spec. We don't have one on access. Keep remembering that. The temp spec is a crisis situation. We need to make it a consensus policy or modify it within a very short defined time frame. If you start mixing up access discussions with the temp spec discussions, you are delaying the former. And as the charter itself says, you can't really approach access until you've resolved questions in regarding the temp spec. So I hope we can agree immediately to just lose number four there.
I wonder if we, Barry, maybe after this meeting we think about, let's look at the schedule and see if we want to keep four sections without access or anyway, we'll talk about that. So thank you, Milton. Good comment. Ara?
Thanks, Kurt. Ammer here. Just to add to what Farzi and Milton said, I do agree with them, but I'll just add to what they said. I think if we do a very early survey on access, then the responses that the EPDP team will be seeing will be based on assumptions on what we reach in terms of recommendations on gating and other issues. So I don't think it would be a worthwhile way to spend the limited time we have. I think if the survey was conducted after the EPDP team does reach consensus on issues of gating and others, then that would make more sense to me. And just the being cognizant of the time we have at our disposal and how best to use it. Thanks.
Margie?
Hi, this is Margie. I strongly disagree with that approach. From our perspective in the BC, access is critical. We're not talking here about accreditation. The temporary specification talks about access, reasonable access, and that includes things like RDAP and other elements of access that aren't specific to accreditation. So I feel that that's an important part of this. It's part of the charter and the work that needs to be done. And yes, it's probably going to be a difficult conversation, but it doesn't mean that it's not necessary and needs to be part of our schedule.
So thank you, Margie. How are you? I hope you're well. So here's what we're going to do. One is I want to spend the last 9 minutes of this meeting on this ambitious schedule. I really wanted us to focus on that because I want to meet it if we agree to it. So I really want to hear comments about that. So this is what we can do. We can leave the form there for adding information about access since it's there. But with a clear understanding that the purpose for including this was just to capture information for the later discussion. So we'll capture this information and people's thoughts, but we're still going to march through the discussion in a way that we discuss, the temporary specification fully and complete the initial report on that before we get to the access discussion. Alan?
Thank you very much. I support what Margie said. The details of the access are not something that we can do now, nor should we, because we do need to replace the parts of the temp spec that are there. But the existence of an access methodology and understanding what the overall ground rules will be is really important, because what we're doing in the first part is either going to be contingent on that being available or not. And if it's not available as some of us imagine it may be, then we're going to take different positions on the earlier parts. So although we can't settle on the details, we certainly have to understand how it's going to fit into the overall mechanism to do the first part. Thank you.
Thanks, Milton.
Yes, I'm getting increasingly disappointed with this conversation, because it shows a certain lack of adherence to the charter and a lack of understanding of the charter. So let's not have a debate about whether access is important. Of course it's important, and of course it's in the temp spec. It says that registrars shall provide access to legitimate parties. So what's happening now under the temp spec is that registrars and registries have to respond to these requests in some way. There's just no unified model. Okay, so access exists, and there's no need to accelerate its discussion. What the charter says very clearly is that before you discuss access and accreditation and come up with a unified model that is an ICANN policy, you have to answer the gating questions. The language is black and white. It's unambiguous. You have to answer the gating questions, and you have to have consensus on the gating questions. Now, there's just really no basis for a good faith argument about this. We have to do one thing first and then move to the next thing. And I'm not understanding what the tactics or rationale is for trying to throw those questions that are supposed to come after the gating questions into the initial thing. It's obviously a very disruptive thing that's going to prevent us from coming to agreement on those elements of the temp spec that are less controversial. So let's just do this right. And, if we can come to agreement on the temp spec, which I think we can, then we'll have time to turn to access as the charter calls for.
Thank you, Nolan. Well put. Stephanie? Hi, Stephanie. How are you?
Stephanie, very well, thank you. I hope you can hear me.
Yep. Milton has said most of what I wanted to say. I will merely add that the primary goal of the temp spec is to comply with the GDPR, and it is important that we look in a manner that is compliant with the GDPR. We have recently heard from the DPAs that any kind of an access model is a voluntary implementation process. They didn't use the word implementation, but that is not really what we're focused on. Yes, provide access, but as Milton said, it's going on now. I raised my also to raise an other related business issue, and that is that we've had a volunteer from the Council of Europe, Peter Kimpian, who you will recall bought the data commissioners with his organization to Copenhagen, and he would be willing to join us as an independent expert. I'm putting it out there as a concept. I think we will need advice from independent data protection commissioners, and I think that's the easiest way to get it. So we in the NTSG are certainly very enthusiastic about him joining as some kind of an expert, not a voting member, obviously, but someone we should turn to. So just putting it out there as something to ruminate on before our next meeting. Thank you.
Thank you, Stephanie. Caboose?
Yes, I think we should not be disappointed of anything. No one said that access has more importance than others, but the issue is that people said deleting that. They may be deleting from this part of discussion. So the sequence of actions provide that first, before talking on access, you have to clear the rest. There's no disagreement on that. Maybe some misunderstanding. So I think you take it as such. So before going to the access, but in fact, it's not access model, it's unified access model. Something exists, but you have to do two parts of that. We do that after we finish with the remaining part, and then you go back to that. So we don't categorize that important or not important, and you should not be disappointed or encouraged. Thank you.
Good comment, Caboose. Thank you, Mark.
This is Mark for the record. Actually, that was the exact comment that I was going to make, is that the alarm came when it was proposed to eliminate all of number four, which includes access. There's no need to debate about the annex, but simply eliminating number four seemed ill-considered.
Right. So, Milton, I assume that's an old hand. So I'm trying to figure out the best way to put this, but my takeaway of it is that there's this request for input here. It has a blank for access. The input what we were just when we created this, we were just taking advantage of a skinny part four to solicit input on access at this stage for use later. So I don't see a harm in leaving it so long as we all recognize we follow Milton's advice that we march down the path here in the right way. And in any event, people are free. There's a blank at the end of the form where people are free to input whatever information they want on any part of the temporary specification plus the annex, and so can do that. So, I'm for not foreclosing the possibility for people to offer comments, but clearly, we're not going to discuss the access issue until we get to the temporary specification. I think the second part of what I want to say is that the triage talks about the temporary specification, so I'm unclear. So it necessarily does not include the access portion. So I'm for leaving the opportunity to comment on access in, but essentially it's going to be stored in a box, and I think that's where we are. So we're at the end of our call. So we're going to follow this the schedule for soliciting feedback. So you'll receive information in your email boxes about how to go about this. But there's the link. There's the survey. We'll put out some more information about that in the very near future. And that's that. So let me just close by saying I'm closing because it's time to close, and I'm really gratified by the amounts of participation. I hope everybody on the call participates verbally in the discussion, mostly because I can't follow three chat rooms and the conversation and my puny slides at the same time. We'll follow up with notes and actions after the meeting and make them succinct as possible. This is a lot of work and for everyone, and I appreciate the fact that you're here. And I see my duty is the need to make that work as straightforward and simple as possible, so you spend your time on substantive issues that gets us down this path. And I would appreciate any advice that anybody has regarding that and how we work together in the future. So with that, I'm going to let everybody go, and thank you very much for your time and all your effort today.
Thank you, everyone. Okay. Once again, the meeting has been adjourned. Please remember to disconnect all remaining lines and have a wonderful rest of your day.